He spun around. The icy cold penetrated his insides. More were appearing out of the darkness. "Hermione, think of something happy," Harry yelled, raising his wand. He began to chant, "Expecto Patronum, Expecto Patronum." "Hermione, help me." "Expecto," Hermione whispered. "Expecto." The Dementors were closing in. They formed a solid wall around Harry and Hermione and were getting closer. "Expecto Patronum," Harry yelled. A thin wisp of silver escaped his wand and hovered like mist before him. Harry felt Hermione collapse next to him. He was now alone. By the feeble light, he saw a Dementor very close to him. It couldn't walk through the cloud of silver mist that Harry had conjured, but now a dead, slimy hand slid out from under the cloak. Harry knew they were watching him, and he heard their rattling breath like an evil wind. The nearest Dementor raised its rotting hand and lowered its hood. Where there should have been eyes, there is only thin, gray, scabbed skin stretched over empty sockets. And there was a mouth, a gaping, shapeless hole, sucking the air with the sound of a death rattle. A paralyzing terror filled Harry. And then a pair of strong, clammy hands attached themselves around Harry's neck. It was going to get rid of him first. He could feel its putrid breath. And then through the fog, he saw a silvery light. He fell forward onto the grass. The Dementor must have released him. The blinding light illuminated the grass around him. The cold was ebbing away. Something seemed to be driving the Dementors back. With every ounce of strength, Harry raised his head and he saw an animal amidst the light galloping across the lake. Harry tried to make out what it was. It was as bright as a unicorn. Fighting to stay conscious, Harry watched it canter to a halt as it reached the opposite shore. Harry saw by its brightness somebody welcoming it back, raising his hand to pat it. Harry felt the last of his strength leave him. His head hit the ground as he fainted. Let's look at a question. Have you ever been spellbound? Have you ever imagined that you were a wizard? Have you ever felt trapped in scary or highly anxious situations? And have you ever wished that you could somehow wave a magic wand and cast a spell over the fear and toxicity and deadness and to conjure up a new world? A world that just might be more loving, more life-giving, more compassionate? Who of us as children did not imagine what it might be like to want to run away from home? Who of us might have actually done so? For an hour, maybe? Maybe longer? Do you remember where you hid, hoping that a parent or someone else would miss you so much that they would search everywhere for you? Oh, please come back. Do you remember that little song, "Nobody loves me, everybody hates me, yes, I'll go eat worms"? Who among us has not, at some point, wanted to escape the present and perhaps imagine that we had superhuman powers, the power to escape from places of spiritual death and begin anew in a land of Oz or Narnia or Hogwarts, a land of enchantment, wonder, mystery, amazement? Thought experiment. Suppose that you have been chosen by the UUA to serve on a blue ribbon task force, and your job is to choose one myth, one legend, that most clearly represents the core values of our UU tradition. What myth might you choose? Would you have several compelling options in mind? I think I already revealed my own nomination if I were on this commission. I'll give you a hint. This myth begins and ends in Kansas. On the other hand, you might respond, "Oh, forget it. Our job is, as responsible UUs, is to debunk myths as foolish superstitions." I wonder, is it really our role as religious progressives to be myth busters and to take it upon ourselves to discredit myths? If so, that might be rather like taking a sledgehammer and smashing every lens, template, and filter that we could find, presuming that such devices are human constructs that distort our vision and thereby misrepresent the real truth. Unfortunately, such myth-busting has a long history in our Western culture. In Plato's Republic, he banishes poets and myth-makers from his ideal state. What concerned Plato was not the mythic nature of the stories by Homer and Hesiod and the other Greek poets. What Plato feared was that common people might misinterpret myths as if they were actual history. Plato wanted to protect the citizenry from their own self-deceptions, their own literalism and hyper-rationality. And I wonder, to some extent, might we still be living in Plato's shadow, devaluing legends and myths and other metaphorical, ambiguous forms of expression? Recall our reading from a moment ago. This is from the chapter entitled The Dementor's Kiss in Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. What are Dementors, anyway? Dementors are those mythical powers that conspire against inhabitants of the wizard world. Dementors can also enter our world. Dementors are those who drain peace, hope, and happiness out of the air around them. Get too near a Dementor, and every good feeling, every happy memory will be drained right out of you. In Harry Potter's world, Dementors are dark, hooded specters. You can spot them, hovering, lurking in the shadows, with a cold, rattling breath, the living dead. In our world, Dementors may be camouflaged in drag, hard to spot. But they too have the power, sometimes with super PAC funding, to drain the life and the joy and the spirit of hope out of others or out of an entire nation of others. Clever, cynical, manipulative Dementors can turn large masses of people towards sour, spiteful, and destructive behaviors. Now, in Harry Potter's world, he feels the icy chill of the Dementors as they surround him and come after him first. And so he struggles to hold fast to who he is and who he knows himself to be. And he gasps with every ounce of his energy. Expecto patronum, expecto patronum, expecto, I hope for, I believe in another possibility. Friends, this is why it is our relationships in congregational life, such as in affinity groups or covenant groups, this is what is so crucial. These are the folks who will keep our spirits up, give us encouragement amidst dementoring forces, forces which, like a cold, rattling wind, can sap the human spirit. Amidst the dementoring zealots of this world, those who are self-appointed guardians of cold, absolute truth and correctness, those who have idolized their own myths with a kind of misplaced concreteness, amidst all of this dementoring, friends, it's up to us to speak goodness and love into being. Not going to exterminate dementors. It is our job to speak love into being against the odds. Even when the coldness has nearly drained all the life out of us, we must struggle to find our own way to say expecto patronum and expecto resurrectione mortuorum, whatever the word might be for you that speaks love into being. The question, though, of the myth-buster still remains. Is it naive to seek answers to life's problems in fanciful tales where evil is eliminated by simply waving a wand? Where princes always show up in the nick of time? Where people live happily ever after. Some myths seem so simple, so utterly removed from our messy world. Having to make a living, stay healthy, provide for and protect loved ones, to stand up against and even get along with dementoring forces and challenging situations. Yet all of these concerns depend upon our ability to form and to sustain meaningful relationships. This means confronting and dealing with all that can undermine our respect for one another. Fairy tales use fantasy to eliminate and illuminate and magnify and turn up the contrast. How shall we use our freedoms responsibly against all the odds? If I were to fault the Harry Potter myths and other myths at all, if I were to be a super critic of these once upon a time stories, it would be in the tendency to portray the imagery of darkness and light, goodness and evil. If only dark and light, good and evil, could be so simply set apart. Some of you remember those old black and white cowboy westerns from long ago where the good guys wore the hard hats, the white hats, I'm sorry, hard hats too, yeah. If only there were identifying labels on evil and dementoring. Not in my experience. Camouflaging is incredibly ingenious. I think Solzhenitsyn had it right when he wrote, "If only there were evil people somewhere insidiously committing evil deeds, and all we had to do was to separate them from the rest of us and destroy them. But the line dividing good and evil is a line that cuts through the heart of every one of us. And who is willing to destroy a piece of their own heart? For during the lifetime of any heart, this line keeps moving. Sometimes it is squeezed one way, sometimes it is squeezed another. One and the same human being is at various ages and under various circumstances a totally different human being, at times close to a devil, at times close to an angel. Their name may not change. And yet to that name we ascribe the whole lot, goodness and evil." You know, myths have another crucial purpose. Myths alert us to those of every age who would reduce life's wonder to argumentative precision. Those who give a kind of misplaced concreteness to words and definitions. Some 20 centuries ago, the Pharisees in ancient Palestine backed Yeshua into a corner and demanded, "Just who is my neighbor? Define your terms." They wanted a legal definition of neighbor so that they would not waste their time being neighborly to someone whose legal residence fell outside their circumference of responsibility. They wanted a legal definition. "Answer," they screamed. "Define your terms." Yeshua replied by saying, "You know, that reminds me of a story." See, stories, like myths, are parables. They're like parabolic reflectors to gather light and to illuminate a fearful world. Friends, I'm convinced that myths, if properly understood, can serve to illuminate our spirits as well. In particular, myths can free us from the idolatry of literalism and deepen our appreciation for evocative, metaphorical language. Myths invite us to release our misplaced concreteness and instead reclaim paradox, ambiguity, wonder, humility, and amazement. Let's return where we began. Hogwarts. Harry and his friends. In Harry's world, love enters in. Love serves as a powerful countercharm. Anyone filled with hatred finds it painful to touch a person who has been deeply loved. If only it were true that our love could always protect our children against harm. Nonetheless, the love that we give our children and to others does leave an invisible mark that helps fortify them amidst powers that could do them harm. Love does work lasting wonders. To have been loved so deeply, even if the person who once loved us may now be gone, that love still abides with us and sustains us against that which kills the spirit. What if every child could grow up with love and be blessed by that kind of counter charm? I think there's another religious dimension to the Harry Potter stories. It has to do with freedom. As you know, our sort of core values as Unitarian Universalists are freedom, reason, tolerance. That's one way to look at our version of the Trinity. Freedom is one of them. The freedom of being a wizard in Harry's world is also the freedom that you and I have to dream and to make our dreams real. That's what this building edition is about. And this message is in every one of the Harry Potter books. And it says, yes, you and I have free will. And we also have power. And yet it is how we exercise that free will and that power that determines who we are. Dumbledore says to Harry Potter at the end of the Chamber of Secrets, "It is our choices, Harry, that show us who we truly are far more than our abilities." And if that isn't one of the central messages of Unitarian Universalism, I don't know what is. At the end of the final novel, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Harry dreams of a post-death conversation with his wise guide, Professor Dumbledore. And so Harry asks the professor, "Is this real? Or has this all been happening inside my head?" And Dumbledore wisely replies, "Of course it is happening inside your head. But why on earth should that mean that it's not real?" Hogwarts is real. And it is inside our imaginative powers. And it is home for all generations who discover themselves. amidst darkness and hope, dementoring and transformation. Through Harry Potter, we just may learn the missing piece and learn how to live. You know, the world of Hogwarts includes a mysterious kind of alchemy. The Sufi mystic Rumi refers to this alchemy in the words that I've chosen as a unison reading for our closing. And these words are in your order of service and may be projected on the screens as well. I invite you to read along with me in unison these words by the poet Rumi. Learn the alchemy true human beings know. The moment you accept the troubles you've been given, the door will open. Welcome difficulty as a familiar comrade. Joke with torment brought by the friend. Sorrows are the rags of old clothes and jackets that serve to cover and then are taken off. That undressing and the beautiful naked body underneath is the sweetness that comes after grief. The hurt you embrace becomes joy. Call it to your arms where it can change. A silkworm eating leaves makes a cocoon. Each of us weaves a chamber of leaves and sticks. Silkworms begin to truly exist as they disappear inside that room. And without legs, we fly.